Hello, welcome to the debate. I'm Kavi Taqwa. Iran has followed through with scaling back its commitments that was signed under the JCPOA. It has announced that it's increased its uranium stockpile, although it has said that this is reversible. Reactions have been swift from the U.S. saying this is not allowable, to this being a result of the U.S. withdrawal in the first place. In this edition of the debate, we ask, should Iran be the only party to adhere to the deal? But before starting tonight's debate, let's talk to Press TV's Jerome Hughes, who joins us from Brussels, about the reactions by the European signatories of the 2015 nuclear deal. Well, Jerome, what have they said regarding Iran's move?
Conference just about a week ago here in Brussels, it was all about the Iran nuclear deal, and there was a senior official there from the European External Action Service, which is effectively the sort of foreign department of the European Union. It's where Federica Mogherini, the foreign policy chief, she heads it up. And this senior official was very vehement and very passionate about trying to get across the point that actually behind the scenes, officials are working, what she said, around the clock, day and night, to try and save the Iran nuclear deal by getting these various mechanisms in place, like INSTEX and the blocking statute. In other words, these instruments to allow trade to continue with Iran so that Iran can enjoy the benefits from the deal. There was also an official from a senior official from a London think tank who is very much an expert, and she said that's actually happening in London as well. Despite Brexit and everything else, huge efforts are taking place behind the scenes. But if you speak to senior officials here in Brussels off the record, privately, they're actually saying that they can fully understand Iran's frustration. They can fully understand why Iran is trying to push back against the United States' illegal move to withdraw from the Iran nuclear deal. The problem is, of course, that it's the key thing here, and all of this comes down to the sort of willingness of the EU leaders. And what are they saying in public? Well, they're, of course, they're afraid to stand up to Washington very often. They're critical of Iran in terms of what it's trying to do, in terms of pushing back, pulling back a little bit on its commitments as part of the JCPOA. But really, what is happening behind the scenes is also very important. So, okay, the EU leaders might be saying something publicly, but actually behind the scenes, they're very critical of Trump. They're very angry with him about pulling back on the Iran nuclear deal, and perhaps efforts will be stepped up and these mechanisms will come into play to try and save it. Just briefly, I want to mention about Josep Borrell, Spain's foreign minister. He's going to be the next foreign policy chief here, EU foreign policy chief, once it's ratified by the European Parliament. And that's actually quite positive for the Iran nuclear deal in a sense, because he's very critical of Donald Trump and Donald Trump's policies. He's quite outspoken. That might be a positive. Also, Ursula von der Leyen, she's going to be the next European Commission president. And again, she would be very much in line with Angela Merkel's politics. So she'd be supportive of saving the deal. And Charles Michel, the same, he's the current Belgian prime minister, and he's going to be the next European Council president. So all of that is quite positive in a sense. But of course, it all comes down to the leaders at the end of the day, the EU leaders.
Thank you for that, Jerome Hughes. We appreciate it. Our guest joining us for this edition of the debate, senior analyst at Foreign Policy and Focus, Ian Williams, joins us from New York. We also have historian and journalist Brecht Jonkers, who joins us from Belgium. Let me start first with you, Ian Williams, and get a reaction from you about the news. First of all, it's reported that Iran is said that its low enriched uranium stockpile has been exceeded. Iran has not done that, according to what statements they have said, and said Iran, quote, this is because remaining signatories to the pact failed to meet Tehran's demands to be shielded from U.S. sanctions. And there's a reference to Articles 26 and 36 of the nuclear deal, at the same breath saying that this can be reversed.
Well, I think it's a very finely tuned response on the part of Iran. It's self-evidently absurd for the U.S. to claim that Iran has broken the deal when they're the ones who ripped up the deal. And on the other hand, the Europeans trying to shelter against Trump's wrath and John Bolton's wrath are quite cowardly in condemning Iran. Iran has now pushed them into a position where they're going to accelerate the payment mechanisms to evade American sanctions, which is what Iran wanted to do, and is the sensible and legitimate thing to do. So it's finely balanced. Iran is being sophisticated and very moderate about it. The Europeans, the sort of the technocrats and the bureaucrats, know exactly what's happening. the politicians know that Iran is in the right but don't say so too publicly against Trump, and they don't act actively against Trump. The real thing here is what's happening in Washington again. We've seen signs that John Bolton has a view of things that is not always shared by the president. And the problem with anyone has advising this president is that you have a stubborn and willful and occasionally inspired president who is also profoundly intellectually challenged with a very poor knowledge of geography and history. So the people around him can nudge him in particular ways. They know which triggers to pull, which buttons to push to get him to do what they want. And I think it looks like the other week with the military action, we were saved by his instincts against people trying to push those buttons. So it's a very complex problem, not least because at the core of it is that enigmatic president. Nobody knows quite what he's going to do. And he's not doing this as a weapon, like Henry Kissinger and Richard Nixon said. You know, they said, if we act mad, we'll frighten them. Mm-hmm. This guy is pretty challenged in all sorts of ways. Nobody knows what he's going to do, but they're calling his bluff.
Yeah, we need to elaborate a little bit more, Brett Jonkers, on how this has been reported and what the reaction has been from Iran. The reports, again, saying that Iran has exceeded that and is now in violation of the JCPOA. And I'm going to quote Iran's foreign ministry, Iran's foreign minister's tweet. He has said, "We have not violated the JCPOA. Paragraph 36 of the accord illustrates why. We triggered and exhausted paragraph 36 after the U.S. withdrawal. That's one big point. And we gave E3 plus 2 a few weeks. While reserving our right, we finally took action after 60 weeks. Your reaction?
I think that is very aptly stated by the foreign minister of Iran and basically also by the president and several high functionaries within the Islamic Republic of Iran. Namely, the fact that for starters, the only reason why the Islamic Republic of Iran is exceeding this 300 kilogram limit on enriched uranium, low enriched uranium, might I add, is of course because the JCPOA agreement is de facto no longer really in effect. Yes, okay, it's only the United States that has pulled out, it has withdrawn, but the United States sanctions, the sheer madness and extent of these sanctions mean that it is nearly impossible for any corporations, even if they're European or from any other nation around the globe, to basically do business with Iran without suffering massive financial consequences. And obviously there are not a lot of companies, private corporations that have that put their, let's say, their honor system before their financial quota in the end, at the end of the month, at the end of the year. So these American sanctions have hit very hard on every company that wants to do business with Iran. They have hit extremely hard within Iran itself, of course. And so when Iran now says, like, okay, we are exceeding the 300 kilograms, but indeed they have the JCPOA agreement to show for it that they have the right to do so, they have announced it already 2 months ago, they have announced they would exceed it eventually. Plus, what I think is very important is that we have to bear in mind that the major reason why Iran is exceeding their stockpile of enriched uranium, which they're not using for anything, to be very clear, the reason why they are exceeding the 300 kilograms is because they can't really get rid of the 300 kilograms that they already have. Normally, this enriched uranium is supposed to be exported, it's supposed to be sold to relevant companies, to countries that are trustworthy, that can dispose of it, or at least, you know, that can stockpile it. And then everything would be okay. But there are no or barely any corporations that are now, you know, foolhardy enough to start buying up Iranian enriched uranium, because if you buy Iranian uranium, what you're doing is conducting business transactions with Iran, which means that you're giving money to Iran, which means that you will most likely fall under very heavy sanctions from the United States. So obviously Iran only has two real options to take. Number one, it is exceeding the stockpile of enriched uranium while stockpiling, you know, the rest in a safe location, or option number two is completely stopping all their nuclear power plants and effectively plunging Iran into an energy crisis, which of course no sane leader would ever do to their own nation.
42 minutes ago, based on this tweet I'm looking at, and I need to bring this up, Ian Williams, The Iranian foreign minister has said Iran is committed to the full implementation of the JCPOA, adding, as long as E3 EU implements their economic commitments. So moving forward, Iran will comply with its commitments under the JCPOA in exactly the same manner as the EU E3 have and will comply with theirs. Fair enough? What do you think? Is that fair, the request that Zarif is making, Ian Williams?
Well, I think the Iranian response has been perfectly graduated and graded for the circumstances. As your previous speaker said, we have this catch-22 absurdity that Iran is not allowed to sell the uranium, so of course there's a stockpile. Iran, by the way, could give the uranium away, which would really get people upset if it started giving it to people like North Korea. But they haven't. They've always been very scrupulous about the NPT. And it's now up to the Europeans. The Europeans have been goaded against all of their cowardly instincts into accelerating the payment program so that other people will trade. And the pressure is on them to do something more. And, you know, I might add, just in the long term, the short-sightedness of this policy on the part of the US is it's really putting the pressure on the rest of the world to take concrete steps to stop the American attempts to extraterritoriality. I mean, we now have an international crisis on another level because Canada has been pressured into arresting a Chinese corporate executive because their company is trading with Iran, which is not illegal in Canada. It's not illegal in anywhere in the rest of the world. So they really are reducing to absurdity the whole scope of sovereignty, international law. The US is not the people to do this. They're the ones that decry international law for everybody else but apply it. And I think that this is a huge diplomatic own goal for them. And in the end, they're going to lose this showdown. Trump needs a graceful way to climb down, I think. Or John Bolton will persuade him to take belligerent action, which would be even more disastrous. But it is, I think the Iranian response has been perfectly graduated so far.
Well, why is it, Brent Yonkers, that we're looking at this payment mechanism to have been executed in the form and manner that it did? I think, based on just the timeline and the length of time it took for it to be operational, it was just days ago, after about a year, or maybe even longer. At the same time, there are a number of problems with it. One, that it doesn't include Iranian oil sales, something that Iran has said needs to happen. Also, the fact that this is in the context of humanitarian goods like medicine, medical devices, and food, which, those aren't really targeted by U.S. sanctions anyways. And thirdly, we're just talking about millions of euros, not really enough for a country of 80 million people in terms of their economic needs. Do you think that Europe actually could do more, or is it listening to the U.S. and complying and adhering to the U.S. demands more?
Well, I think at this point, indeed, the European Union is so far has shown quite a lot of cowardice in the face of Donald Trump, in the face of John Bolton, Mike Pompeo, and the rest of the U.S. Leading elite and government system. I know that today, for example, the European Union has indeed said that they would not pursue any further sanctions against Iran, despite the fact that it quote-unquote violated the agreement, like they said. Of course, it is a nice-sounding phrase, perhaps, that sounds good in international mainstream media, but of course it basically means absolutely nothing. It just means that Europe is content, the European elite at least, is content to keep on going in the way that they're doing now, which is basically do nothing. This entire bartering system that they planned to do for Iran sounded like a very good plan. It still does sound like a very good plan, a very smart way to circumvent U.S. sanctions, but de facto on the scene, this has not really happened. You know, Iran is still suffering tremendously from the economically speaking and financially speaking, suffering tremendously from the U.S.-imposed sanctions, the reimposed sanctions. The oil export has absolutely plummeted. Of course, inflation has soared in the past year alone. And this is obviously, this has happened so suddenly that it is obviously not the fault of Iran itself. It's not in some sort of an endemic problem in Iran's economy. This is just a very sudden rupture of international trade that would hit in any country extremely hard, of course. So when you see indeed that there is, let's say, this bartering system in place, which basically is some sort of a fancied up version of humanitarian aid, which is not exactly very necessary in Iran right now. Iran is not like a starving third world nation. But when you see this is talking about a few million, you know, millions of euros instead of billions of euros or billions of dollars, which Iran should rightfully have the right to at a proper trade and a proper level. And of course, the absolute absurdity that it does not include oil export. You cannot make an economic deal with any Middle Eastern nation and exclude oil. That doesn't really make a lot of sense, especially considering the fact that petroleum trade is extremely important for the world economy at large. So it is also hitting the rest of the world as well, due to the fact that there will be less Iranian oil or at a far higher price on the market. So Europe can definitely do a lot more. Yeah, you can say, you know, the United States will threaten, but the European Union represents about 500 million people on the planet and is basically the biggest internal market in the world. So if they were to unite and really push back against the United States, and they're by doing so actually join Russia and China, which have already decided to push back and to condemn the U.S. sanctions, the U.S. decisions, they could definitely make Donald Trump turn back and run for the hills. But so far they have been too cowardly, or perhaps too corrupted to actually do so.
Well, I'm just curious, Ian Williams, what the EU thinks when they're dealing with a U.S. president who has not been shy from saying that, you know, he's not a big fan of the EU as a whole, and a breakup maybe is better for this unification or this unity or union, I should say. At the same time, promoting Brexit and then still being on a day like today, if you recall, U.S. has come out and has slapped tariffs now worth billions onto EU. Are they still listening to the U.S. when it comes to Iran, even though the U.S. is dumping on them the form and manner that it is?
Well, I mean, I think it's obviously time for the EU to stand up, and even if you might consider China and Russia unsavory allies, on this there's a common interest, and I don't know, time for imaginative solutions. How about bartering Airbuses for Iranian oil? That will hit Trump both ways, since the sanctions the tariffs that you've just mentioned on the EU are about alleged subsidies to Airbus. But then you also have WTO action pending against the US because of its subsidies to Boeing, not to mention the FAA connivance at flying unsafe aircraft. So there are lots of issues here on which the European Union could push back. But I mean, we are in a time of complete turmoil where there's very little in the way of leadership. Angela Merkel is going, and she was the closest thing to leadership that Europe had. We have the British about to leave with a Trump-like clown about to become prime minister, possibly. We have right-wing parties across Europe. It's very difficult for Europe to stand united under these circumstances. And, I mean, take the resolute action that is really necessary for the, not just for the pride, but for the future of the EU, that they will not be bullied by the White House. They will not be bullied by a unilateralist America that wants to make itself great at the expense of everybody else. The European Union does have interests here, their collective interests, and they align to a large degree with what Russia and China thinks on this, and with Iran. You don't have to love the Iranians, you don't have to love Putin, and you don't have to love the Chinese regime to see that there is a common interest here in resisting bullying. Mm-hmm. And it's clearer because Trump, in no way, unlike his predecessors, he doesn't invoke human rights, he doesn't invoke civil liberties when he's talking about these countries. It's naked self-interest for the US and support for Israel are about the only issues that really get brought up. So that's not something the rest of the world shares. There's not a rallying call here. The European Union can stand up against them and will probably get popular support for doing so.
Okay, final question goes to you, Brent Yonkers. How will this standoff end? Can the EU stand up to the US or try to convince the US presidents to come back into the deal and at the same time appease Iran, were that to be the case? Under a minute, please.
Well, I still maintain some sort of hope that eventually this will end well. I hope so. I pray so. I think that the fact that the European Union has not immediately jumped on the Trump bandwagon, on the anti-Iranian bandwagon, and the fact indeed that we hear, like from the reporter in Brussels, that we hear that they are working around the clock behind the scenes, and that many politicians, when they're off the record, when they're not being listened to by media, off the record, are extremely critical of Trump and actually believing that this Iran deal needs to be saved, then I think those are at least some sort of hopeful signals that can give some semblance of hope for the future. So let's say that I at the same time I am afraid for what is going to happen, but I remain hopeful that eventually Trump will see that this is a ridiculous policy that is not going to lead anywhere, especially since Iran is always going to be resistant. And hopefully Trump, I think it would be possible that Trump will be trying to save face by putting all the blame on his advisors like John Bolton and perhaps indeed make another shakeup of an administration.
Thank you very much. Let me thank our guest, senior analyst at Foreign Policy and Focus, Ian Williams, and thank you, historian and journalist Brett Yonkers. Thanks for tuning in to another edition of The Debate. From Mika Vitapwe, entire team in the capital, Tehran, is goodbye.